Your sensors are correct. Do not adjust your heading. You've discovered the Omega Particle, streaming to the Alpha Quadrant and beyond. Here's your host, the anchorman of the Federation, the Doctor of Dilithium. This is Jonathan Wiegand.
Welcome to the Omega Particle Podcast. Like the man said, I am Jonathan Wiegand, your anchorman of the Federation, with half my brain tied behind my back, just to make it fair. Today, we are covering part two in our Mirror Universe breakdown. And yes, sadly, that will be our final part. So buckle up, everybody. It is going to be a completely loaded episode today with different theories and different explanations, deep diving into what exactly is the Terran Empire, how did the timelines diverge, etc. But we will get to that. However, if your beautiful ears have not yet danced to the rhythm of our part one, please scoot back, tune into that. Trust me, it's the golden ticket to this cosmic roller coaster that we're about to hop on again today. So go and do that. But if not, if you're just going to haven't listened to part one, but just want to listen to part two, hey, it's free country. Do whatever you want. I feel like the best way to describe the, I guess you could say, Prime Universe and the Mirror Universe is that we have a handshake replaced with a backhand slap. And these universes and the how they weave together, and it's just really wild. And it's also very critical, as we learned in the last episode. And the storytelling just gives us a lot more avenues to go down. So just a little recap here. So we have this, well, should I say this, picture this. We have the noble United Federation of Planets, and it's swapped out for this iron-fisted Terran Empire. And we have very familiar faces, but they hide, you know, very mischievous, sometimes over-the-top evil, where it's so over-the-top you think it's like they're twirling their mustaches in their spare time, kind of like, I don't know, like a 1930s cartoon. It can be a little bit overkill. And sometimes all you need to know that if somebody's evil is that they have a goatee. So is it evil Spock? Well, he has a goatee. Then he's evil. Some of the big questions we're going to go down the rabbit hole today is, where did the tracks of history between these two universes veer so wildly apart? Was there a single moment in the history that caused these to kind of spiral out in separate ways? And it's kind of like we went from this, you know, very humanitarian-driven, very starry-eyed explorers to galaxy-conquering tyrants. And there's a couple theories. Like, one theory is if the Axis has won World War II, or if Khan, you know, won the eugenics war, things like that. But we're going to be answering all of that today. So whether you're a longtime Trekkie or you're just kind of starting your journey here through the final frontier, let's embark and let's get on to this Mirror Universe part two together. So Luna, let's roll. Yeah, I appreciate everybody being so patient with me getting this last part two episode out. I've been very sick, and I don't know about you guys, but whenever you go on a big vacation, you come back, I've just been, yeah, we got everybody in there. My house got sick, and it was bad. So it was mainly like throat and a lot of nasal stuff. So I couldn't record. I was out. I even tried to record a little bit, and I couldn't do it. It sounded terrible, and I just couldn't put out poopy content to everybody, because you guys deserve better than that. So we're going to start today going down some of the theories. Theories as to when these two timelines separated. And I know I mentioned in the last episode that it's kind of going to be hard because they're kind of, lack of a better term, mirrored off one another. So there might be a cosmic kind of cable between the two that they can only drift so far apart. And I think Discovery season 3 even went into that. But we're going to get into some misconceptions and go into some of the debunking of what caused the Terran Empire and who are the real, should I say, guilty parties of making the Terran Empire. So number one biggest theory we're going to debunk here is all of the lights. It's the lights. How did the Terrans come to be? There's this theory running around in Trek circles that the mirror universe must have had different physical constraints than the prime universe. They're saying that the biggest reason is that Terrans are more aggressive because the speed of light is slower, and so that has led to lower photosynthesis and more competition for food. And I have to say that I'm very proud of myself for not messing up photosynthesis. I know I haven't said that word maybe in like 20 years. Either way. So the idea that the mirror universe operates under different physical laws, like a slower speed of light leading to scrappier, more aggressive Terrans, it's a fun thought experiment. Don't get me wrong, it is, but let's be real, it's a bit out there. And I know you're saying, well, Jonathan, this is a complete mirror universe, we're already out there, but I think tweaking something as fundamental as the speed of light would basically throw the whole cosmic rule book out the window. I mean, imagine changing the speed of light would mess up everything from the way, you know, stars burn to how even colors look to the human eye. Now, in our fantastic research that the team here at OPP has done, we found out, you know, and Michael Burnham at Discovery does talk about the light feeling, quote unquote, off in the mirror universe, saying that it's lost its sparkle. And yeah, it is noted that Terrans squint more at bright lights than their prime universe buddies, hinting at, hey, maybe this is kind of this evolutionary tweak that's kind of deep rooted in their genes. But to me, that's the kind of a show dealing more with metaphor rather than actual like hardcore science cosmic facts. I'm much more inclined to see the Terrans as humans who have just taken a wildly different cultural route rather than being a completely separate species evolving under like dimmer skies. I think it's a fun thought experiment, like I said, but to me it's less about biology and more about showing how different choices, whether that be political choices or cultural choices, could lead us down radically different paths. I think this whole sensitive to light thing is probably more about highlighting their dark metaphorical leanings than anything else. Moving on to theory number two, and that is that the Vulcans have changed drastically. And how have they changed drastically? And that's because they don't have Sarek. So imagine a Star Trek universe where Vulcan took a wildly different turn because Sarek, the legendary philosopher who shaped Vulcan society with his teachings on logic and emotion control, never really got to make his mark. Yep, we're talking about the mirror universe, where, you know, according to some deep dive fan theories, like those in, there's some fan magazines that believe that, you know, Sarek met his aunt as just a baby. I feel like that is still not well enough theory to cause the mirror universes to split and the Terran Empire to be created. I think it just doesn't make sense. And plus, even from a pure canon point of view, the fact that Sarek, whether he was never existed or got killed as a baby, like whatever this theory suggests, to me, here's the problem, is that despite this drastic change, the Vulcans still haven't entirely abandoned logic or the effort to keep their emotions in check. So there's references to logic pop up every now and then, even showing in the universe, in the mirror universe, that Sarek's influence is probably supposedly gone. The Vulcan philosophy survives. And according to, there's many original series episodes like Mirror Mirror, where we see evil Spock, lack of a better term, still hold true to those philosophies. So, I don't know. So, it just seems to me that this theory about Sarek's early demise or not having any influence doesn't quite hold up under the same microscope, simply because mere Vulcans still have a touch of that logical spirit. And plus, again, that's a pretty wild accusation to say that, You know, Vulcans not having logic would cause the Terran Empire and the universes to kind of diverge in a drastic way. I just don't see the Vulcans are influential, but I don't think they're that influential. It'd almost be having another Klingon type of race running around. So the other third, speaking of influence, should I say, the other third kind of debunking theory we're going to go into is, we're going back to Bajor, we're going back to Deep Space Nine, and baby, we're talking about the profits. And I'm not talking about net profit or gross profit. Ew, gross profit. It's an accounting joke. Forgive me. I'm entertaining myself. In the Mirror Universe, it seems that the Bajorans never had their celestial guides. They never had the prophets. The prophets never dropped in for a visit, should you say. And this speculation springs from the fact that the Mirror Universe Bajorans we meet in Deep Space Time don't really seem too hung up on spirituality, unlike their counterparts in the Prime Universe who are deeply, deeply religious. So let's clear the space fog here. Okay, let's just put our cards on the table. Ronald D. Moore. This is actual legitimate evidence, and I'm about to quote, and it's going to date me so much, so bear in mind. So Ronald D. Moore, in a 1997 AOL chat, hinted that while the orbs, and just a refresh, the orbs are these artifacts connecting the Bajorans to the prophets, that he hinted that the orbs might have been lost, destroyed, or slipped into myth for the Mirror Bajorans. They did indeed exist on the other side, but there wasn't a desire to collect or to have orb experiences. And even Mirror Garrick nods to a spiritual force echoing Bajoran beliefs, and through the wormhole in the Mirror Universe still remains a mystery there. It's still a good bet that the prophets are still kicking around. The wormhole aliens are still kicking around in there, but they're just not as, they're just not as concerned with Bajor. So why the secular shift, you may ask, in the Mirror Universe? And I think it might have to do with the Bajorans joining forces with a decidedly non-religious Klingon Cardassian alliance. Remember, just because you don't see someone praying doesn't mean the gods or the prophets in this case aren't playing their long game to protect the Bajoran people. So that is a theory. The prophets, again, we're going very in-depth here, people. So we're going all the research, and so a lot of, especially in the DS9 Mirror Universes, saying it's like, okay, maybe that's the no missing prophets is what diverged the two universes and might have caused the Terran Empire, which I don't buy for a second, because the prophets are still there, number one. Number two, if the Vulcans weren't that influential to create the Terran Empire, I don't think the Bajorans are going to be swinging around their orbs, should I say, to influence and create the Terran Empire. So now getting into some of my favorite theories, and we're going to be debunking some of them, is how the Terran Empire came to be. And the first and probably one of the most popular ones online that I've seen is that the Axis powers won World War II. And in the words of the great Indiana Jones, "Nazis, I hate these guys." The idea that the Terran Empire is a direct legacy of the Axis powers triumphing in World War II is a very, very popular theory, like I said. However, this theory has pretty shaky foundations that we're going to expose here. So some fans draw this connection based to the Empire's fascist characteristics. And pointing fingers at historical culprits like Nazi Germany is a pretty easy one to make and pretty logical leap to make. However, the implications of a Nazi victory are so vast and fundamentally altering to the course of world history, they simply don't align with what we witness in the Mirror Universe. Moreover, the absence of German as a dominant language, because that's, we're not going to get into any of that crap, but that is one of the historical things too, is that if the Axis is won, Japanese and German would have been a dominant language. We don't see that at all. And so that kind of further dilutes this theory. So an alternate speculation ties the mirror universe's divergence to Edith Keeler's survival. And if your ears is dinged for a moment with that name, that's because that was the peace advocate from the original series episode, The City on the Edge of Forever. And a recap in that episode, her living leads to a pacifist movement that delays the U.S. involvement in World War II, and that finally facilitates a dystopian future with the Axis winning. Yet, even in that episode, it clearly depicts that this alternate path results in a reality where Starfleet doesn't even exist. And you're almost entering and entertaining a Man in the High Castle scenario, which doesn't hold up here. And the Axis's powers grip on the globe wasn't everlasting either in both that universe and in Star Trek. So while this theory is very intriguing, they really don't stand up to the scrutiny of Starfleet history or their logbooks. Still a very popular theory and easy, like I said, logical jumps to see the Terrans being so fascist and controlling. It's an easy thing to see, but once you pull back the layers, it kind of falls apart. Another very popular theory having to deal with the eugenics wars and Khan winning them. The mirror universe throws a curveball with the notion that, you know, Khan and his superhuman crew, the Augments, clinch victory in the eugenics wars. Now, this isn't to say I'm dead set against it, but there's a lot of mix-up kind of floating around this idea. Some folks reckon that if Khan and his gang of misfits, should I say, had won, it would mean Earth's entire population got an Augment upgrade. However, that's not quite true, and that wouldn't happen. See, we know and we've seen Terrans, you know, throw down with their Prime Universe counterparts, and the matchups are pretty even. You know, not one's dominating the other every single time, like we've seen Augments fight humans in the past. That, to me, suggests, you know, Terrans are not walking around with all these genetic super boosts inside them. That kind of shows that should the Augments have emerged victorious, it is more likely they would have, like, stirred up Earth's political pot and not, you know, made everybody single an Augment and take everybody out that isn't one. Because I think there was only, wasn't that many of them that started the eugenics war to begin with. And if you're curious and want a deeper dive into the intricacies of Khan's rule and the eugenics wars, please check out our very first two episodes where we cover Khan and the eugenics wars and exactly how he got into the Botany Bay. It's pretty interesting. But to me, it's the fact that was one of Khan's big points, was that he wanted humans to be augmented, and that we see Terrans not be augmented. It could mean, like, you know, maybe he came into power, fell off power. But again, it didn't create the Terran Empire here, in my opinion. There is another intriguing angle with this, and that is that the eugenics war might have never been kicked off in the mirror universe, possibly sidestepped by the effects of the temporal Cold War, which was hinted in a Star Trek novel, Watching the Clock. So go check that out. I'm not going to get it. It is very complicated, but it is interesting notion that, you know, maybe the temporal Cold War influenced the Terran Empire. But speaking of historical events in Star Trek history that involve time travel, let's get into First Contact. So that is my favorite Star Trek movie, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that. It is just beautiful with the music and just the speeches that Picard gives. It's the best. Is this where we finally see the timeline splits? And the theory that the Prime and the universe's split here is particularly intriguing and probably one of the most famous believed theories out there outside of the Axis is winning. This idea really gained traction from the introduction in the Enterprise episode titled In a Mirror Darkly, where Zefram Cochrane's almost infamous welcoming of the Vulcans in Bozeman, Montana, where he greeted them with gunfire instead of open arms, and then they ransacked the ship. So that was pointed to the mark that we know we had a violent start to humanity's venture into the stars, and pretty much laid the groundwork for the Terran Empire. That's what Enterprise kind of showed us. And this view intertwines, but it also contradicts the events of Star Trek First Contact, where, of course, the Enterprise-E crews intervenes, ensuring Cochrane can complete his warp flight, despite this whole Borg onslaught. So one of the big issues I have with this theory is that it suggests that had the Borg and the Enterprise not intervened, then a battle-scarred humanity might naturally evolve into a distrustful, aggressive society that we see in the mirror universe. And I mean, they even have very xenophobic reactions. I find that theory very less convincing. It seems to undermine the resilience and capacity for growth that characterizes humanity. And it suggested that the enlightened era initiated by First Contact could only be achieved through external intervention. So I prefer to think personally that even without the Enterprise-E's heroic efforts, that humanity's better nature would eventually prevail, and that led us to the stars, not through conquest, but through curiosity and cooperation. I just don't like the idea that it had to be the Enterprise and the Borg, and if it wasn't for them, we'd been screwed. So, but I understand the writers of Enterprise. They really wanted to say, this is where it changes. I just think that falls apart pretty quickly, as we just saw. So, there is a theory that I think might be the best one. So, I'll say this. Is that the Terran Empire really is just the Roman Empire that never fell. It is a direct descendant of the Roman Empire. And I think that is a fascinating theory. And it could be correct. But we are going to deep dive and give reasons why and why not this theory could hold up. And maybe leave it to you. And I will give my closing remarks. But this, FYI, this is our last theory. So that we're going to deep dive today. So let's break it down. So anti-Roman argument. So this is the Terran empires are not the Romans. So let's get into it. So empires, no matter how mighty they are, always have expiration dates. The Western Roman Empire lasts around 500 years. And even if we stretch that timeline to include the Byzantine Empire, fall in 1453, you're still looking at less than 1,500 years of Roman rule. So now if the Terran Empire started in 27 BC and continued to the era of the original series, that would be clocking in at about 2,200 years. That's an extraordinary stretch, given the typical empire on the Earth usually has a shelf life of about 250 years. And there's a lot of reasons and theories that if you had a Rome that never fell and continued straight through to spacefaring times, would that mean that the Renaissance, the Industrial Revolution, and every other historical pivotal moment, or should I say historical pivot moment, that shaped our modern world may have never happened, may have just gone on by the wayside and never developed? Plus, the Terran Empire shares more than a few faces with our universe. To me, we're, like I mentioned in part one, that we're very tied. We can't deviate too much from the original, what happens in the Prime Universe. They're tethered together. Again, their parents still end up together. They still end up having children at the same time. So they're the same players, just a different game. We have pretty much the same faces, is that the Roman vibes that we get from the Terran Empire are more about aesthetics than actual ancestry. That's a very good argument. And throughout history, that has always happened. Several empires have claimed, quote unquote, the mantle of Rome and tried to recapture its glory without actually being a continuation of the Roman state at all. Perfect example, think of the Ottomans, the Holy Roman Empire, which, as the joke goes, was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. So there is this human pattern that we've seen throughout the thousands of years of history of adopting Roman symbols for their prestige rather than representing a direct lineage. And that, it seems, that the Terran Empire is doing, choosing Roman iconography for its intimidating legacy rather than it actually being full Roman descent. Now, for pro-Roman arguments, so let's start with the facts. And when I say facts, these are things from canon, from episodes people have said, people have referenced to. But remember especially that last Roman argument I said. Just keep that in mind. So in 2155, Commander Archer revealed that the Terran Empire had been a force for quote-unquote centuries, marking its dominance in the skies with milestones like conquest of the Earth's moon, Luna, which is also our intern's name. No relation, right, Luna? Just kidding. So that detail emerged alongside a portrayal of a society that long ago turned its back on the principles like freedom and equality and kind of view them as rebellious ideas. That is also backed up, too, by Emperor Georgiou in Discovery's episode Vaulting Ambition. So the Empire's roots still remain shrouded in mystery, yet the altered opening credits of Star Trek Enterprise episodes set in the Mirror Universe suggests its inception could date back to the Age of Sail, bringing the historical timeline to between 1571 or 1862 in our history. So definitely could be right around the continuation of that Roman Empire. Maybe. There's even more ideas to back this up, because there's a deleted scene featuring Archer where he is paying homage to, quote-unquote, the gods. Suggests the Empire might either directly continue or be a, like we mentioned before, a spiritual successor to the Roman Empire. And this theory even continues to gain weight and momentum from Marlena Moreau's reference to Kirk potentially becoming a quote-unquote Caesar and the use of quote-unquote Terra for Earth. The 23rd century title bestowed upon Georgiou, complete with Roman influences and Latin terminology, along with Paul Stamets calling her a quote-unquote daughter of Rome, reinforces this Roman connection. Even the Empire's military salutes, fists clenched over hearts, then arms thrust forward, proclaiming long live the Empire, echo the salutations that Roman soldiers and gladiators once offered to their Caesars. So that even further linkens the Terran Empire to the ancient might and traditions of Rome. And I'll say, as a pro-Roman argument, the idea of having a continual Roman Empire would pass by the major human moments like the Industrial Revolution, the Enlightenment, etc. So they just wouldn't occur. The error with that thinking is that you have to remember that both universes share history, but slightly different. So yes, the Industrial Revolution and Enlightenment would still happen in the Roman world, or the Terran world, but it would look different. For instance, in A Mirror Darkly Part 2, on Enterprise, Dr. Phlox observes that while many of the Mirror Universe's versions of celebrated literary works significantly differ from their counterparts in the Prime Universe, Shakespeare's plays maintain their dark intensity across both realities. So this consistency in Shakespeare's tone suggests a long-standing divergence in cultural development between the two universes. Moreover, Emperor Georgiou comments in Discovery episode Vaulting Ambition, we've already mentioned it once, we're mentioning it again, shed light on the societal values of the Terran Empire. She remarks that the ideals like equality, freedom, and compassion were abandoned by Terrans thousands of years ago, indicating that the Empire's foundation and its departure from such principles left it long ago. So yes, we did get Enlightenment ideas in the Terran Empire. Equality, freedom, etc. But they were just abandoned. Again, historical events still happen, just slightly different. So, what is my theory on what created the Terran Empire? I have to say, I don't believe it's a direct, unbroken line of the Roman Empire. But the Terrans did claim it as their own and incorporate parts of it. After the premiere of Discovery's Vaulting Ambition episode, screenwriter Jordan Nardino answered fans' questions through his Twitter feed. And on the topic of the Terran Empire's relation to ancient Rome, he stated, quote, "Lots of discussion in the room about the origins of the Terran Empire. In terms of canon, as always, it's what's on screen and nothing more." He continues, "Unanswered questions leave avenues for future seasons, iterations of Trek to explore. I don't know if the Mirror Universe's quote-unquote point of departure is a specific incident or the entire history of the Mirror Universe somehow darkly mirrors ours." That's what we know, according to the main guy from screenwriter from Discovery. So, I mean, if you look at our canon, it locks us into an origin no later than the 20th century. Giorgio's millennia, quote-unquote, could be construed as hyperbole and just bolstering the Empire's legitimacy. But I firmly do not believe the Terrans are merely a continuation of the Roman Empire, like I said. Mirror Universe Earth history should roughly, but darkly, mirror our history as much as possible. I think Rome never falling would diverge it way too much. Leaders with imperial pretensions have adopted the style and titles of the Roman Empire since, and probably always will. I mean, even Napoleon took the title Augustus, so it's natural for the Terrans to look back at Rome as well. So, in conclusion, my final ideas on the subject of what created the Terran Empire and if there's one moment, I will say that we're deep diving into a lot of the complexities of the Star Trek timelines, both Mirror and Prime universes. And when you do that, you open Pandora's box of temporal puzzles and predestination paradoxes, and these narrative threads weave throughout the century, if not millennia, complicating any attempts to pinpoint a singular divergence point between these two realities. You know, take for example the Kelvin timeline, which nobody likes to talk about. They introduced Nero's ship in 2233, and it emerged from a red matter singularity. At first glance, it seems the timeline splits at this juncture. However, Star Trek is so riddled with bootstrap paradoxes that time loops that seemingly avoid creating alternate timelines happen. So it suggests that the Kelvin timeline existed before Nero's intervention entirely, and then now it's kind of looped in with one of itself, and it's just over the top. And so Simon Pegg, which played Scotty in the Kelvin timeline, said that, you know, he supports the idea that there is always this Kelvin timeline out there. There's multiple dozens of timelines out there, and they sometimes split and interchange. So this perspective challenges our conventional understanding of cause and effect, limited as we are by, you know, a 3D viewpoint of the world and the universe. It even suggests that the Kelvin timeline could include, even in its own, a mission to save the humpback whales, mirroring Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, because they You know, there might still be one ship that wants to come and destroy Earth. So, in essence, the Prime and the Mirror Universes likely never split from a singular shared moment in history, at least from what we can identify and from what's canon. Instead, the Mirror Universe has always been a separate strand, parallel to the Prime Universe, and sometimes they intersect at moments, but they never truly merge. And that is my theory, and that is why I'm sticking to it. And I'm sorry if I didn't give a hot take and say it's the Roman Empire, or it's the Axis powers, or it's Khan, or something like that. But that is what I, after me and my team's hours and hours and hours of research, that is our conclusion, and we are sticking to it. But it is nice to say that, you know, these two universes, this multiverse, you know, they can coexist, and they can occasionally touch, but they're fundamentally different, fundamentally distinct. And that is nice. And like I mentioned in episode one, it is something you need for writing's sake. You can take chances, you can expound on things, you can, you know, for example, see how the Federation would be as a dystopian future. So it gives you a lot of leeway. But anyway, that has been our two-part series on the Mirror Universe, and we are very happy to deliver that to you. And without further ado, Luna, let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening. And again, thank you for your patience. I have been, like I mentioned before, under the weather. So I appreciate everybody waiting for this episode and me getting back. And we will be ramping and rolling in April with our DS9 reviews and a couple really cool different episodes that we will be releasing. But I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon. But as always, thank you all. Interacting with you guys on Instagram, interacting with you guys on Facebook has always been so much fun. And so please feel free to reach out if you guys want to talk about episodes, if you want to have episode suggestions. I always love hearing from you guys. But I'm excited that the weather is eventually turning warm. And with that, just a reminder, keep your mental health in check. Check in on yourself. Check in on your friends and your family. And make sure everybody is thriving and not just surviving. I feel like that's a bumper sticker somewhere. Either way, got to keep those crowns straight, kings and queens. And as always, second star to the right, straight on till morning.